good afternoon. Come in, come in. Let me offer you a glass of sherry, a tale or two, and perhaps one of my priceless antiques.
Tales of Antiquity. Stories of the romantic past captured through the eyes and ears of Eustace Glean, collector extraordinary. His story for today,
Paris Encounter. One glass of dry sherry at your elbow. Yeah, I'm so pleased you managed to drop by. I have something rather special for you today. This enchanting musical box, the work of Mr. James Fothergill of East Cheap, London. It was presented to a Miss Anne Balfour in 1897. Let me tell you about it, and of her Paris encounter. Quite a little adventure. The Balfours of Bedford consider themselves somewhat unique, especially when George Balfour sired no less than 12 girls. The unfortunate mother of this cluster of female progeny suffered a fit of despair at the birth of her 12th daughter and went into a decline. She died 6 months later, leaving the ill-equipped George to cope alone. He met the challenge by placing each child in the care of a relative. George was a grocer by trade, with a chain of modest shops throughout the Midlands, inherited from his forebears, and felt he could more readily provide for his numerous offspring with them placed elsewhere, rather than have them under his feet, so to speak. He worked on average a 12-hour day, 6 days a week. Upon the seventh, he made a point of visiting his children. It usually took him 6 Sundays to complete the round. It was in the January of 1895 that George himself died, leaving the fruits of his labours to his 12 daughters and their generous guardians. 6 months later, when Anne Balfour, the eldest child, learned of her father's bequest to her, she was amazed.
£2,000, Aunt, to each of his children, dear George, and £1,000 to each of their guardians.
But that makes a total of 36,000 pounds.
Your father was hardly a pauper, Anne.
Oh,
you surely didn't expect him to cut you off with a shilling.
No, but I hardly expected so much.
Well, be that as it may, what are you going to do with it?
I've always wanted to travel.
Travel?
Yes. Abroad, I think.
Good heavens. Another country, do you mean?
Yes, Auntie. Paris first, I think.
Paris?
But of course they didn't sink. In fact, it was only a matter of 14 hours before they were safely ensconced in their Paris apartment house. But for Auntie May, it had been quite a traumatic experience, and she required a full 24 hours to recover. But it was a further 2 days before Anne could persuade her auntie to venture into the streets of Paris, and a further day to coax her to sample the delights of French cooking. Until now, she had survived on numerous packets of biscuits, but hunger prevailed. And so, 4 days after their arrival in Paris, they sat at a table at a pavement café on the Avenue Saint-Germain.
Oh, isn't this exciting, Auntie May? Oh, just to sit here and watch the whole of Paris simply pass you by.
Don't these dreadful horse and traps ever stop tearing about all over the place? It's quite deafening.
Carriages, Auntie. I think you'd better get on with your coffee before you start getting crotchety again.
And why we couldn't have a simple pot of tea, I can't imagine. Little wonder the French are such a bilious race.
Oh, dear.
What is it?
The man who has been staring at us for the past 15 minutes is coming over.
Man, dear? Where?
Bonjour, mademoiselle.
Bonjour, I'm sure.
The gentleman who addressed them was elegantly turned out in a dark suit and was in his late 40s. He presented his card, at which Anne scarcely glanced, and said that his employer would be delighted to be introduced to the young lady whose name he ascertained was Anne Balfour. He invited her to call at the hotel at any time and ask for him by name, and the appropriate arrangements would be made. He then gave a brief bow and left. Auntie May had listened to this open-mouthed in shocked disbelief.
Well, the impudence of it. Well,
I gather they're somewhat more informal in Paris, Auntie.
Immoral's the word, dear. You shan't be going, of course.
Oh, I don't know. It might be rather interesting.
I forbid it. I absolutely forbid it.
It is indeed good of you to come, Miss Balfour.
A trifle foolhardy might be a better turn of phrase, but I must confess to being somewhat intrigued. But if my aunt knew of my visit...
I assure you, Miss Balfour, you will not be displeased at the outcome. Through here...
Francis, you have brought the young lady. Excellent. Come forward, my dear Miss Balfour, is it?
Yes.
The gentleman standing before her was of medium build, somewhat stout and bearded. He had a most distinguished air and was exceedingly courteous as he made her at ease, informing her...
I think it might be in order to commence with a little light refreshment before we become more acquainted.
You're most kind,
Call me Bertie. Everyone does, who knows me.
He then went on to tell her that he and Paris were old friends, it being his second home, and would be most flattered if she would allow him the privilege of introducing her to its delights. Anne was too captivated to consider whether it was advisable or otherwise to accept the invitation and agree to allow this charming stranger to be her escort for the next few days.
And he isn't a young man, Auntie, by any means.
I am exceedingly put out, Anne, not to say shamed at your reprehensible behaviour. That a young woman brought up in my care should think of it...
Please, Auntie, not so hard. It isn't old rope you're brushing.
An old man, then, is he?
Mature, shall we say, with a grey beard and receding hairline, and utterly charming. There's something oddly familiar about him, too.
That much is obvious.
Don't be such a prude, Auntie May. We're in Paris, remember?
Well, now that your curiosity's been assuaged, I trust that that's an end to the matter.
Not at all. Bertie wants to show me Paris.
Show you? A total stranger? You refused, of course.
As a matter of fact, I didn't. He's to collect me tomorrow at 10.
I forbid it. I absolutely forbid it.
Bertie was as good as his word, collecting Anne at her apartment house at 10 the following day and spending the rest of that week being a charming and courteous escort. Anne was totally enthralled as he pointed out the Arc de Triomphe, the Eiffel Tower, the Tuileries Gardens, the Notre Dame, the Sacré-Cœur, and numerous other delightful landmarks, saving the Moulin Rouge for the penultimate night of Anne's stay in Paris.
That, my dear Miss Balfour, was the can-can.
A very lively dance, to be sure. Oh, dear.
What is it?
If Auntie could see me in the Moulin Rouge, she considers it bad enough form for me to allow you to accompany me through the streets of Paris in broad daylight.
Hello, Wells!
Ah, la Goulou! Ça va bien?
Très bien! Est-ce que tu m'as fait mon champagne?
Excuse me, my dear Miss Balfour. That impertinent little piece is known as La Goulou.
What did she call you? Wales?
Oh, yes, merely a nickname.
Wales? Of course! Your Highness!
Oh, I thought you were aware.
Oh, stupid of me. I beg you, do forgive me, Your Highness. I am... Oh, dear. If Your Highness would excuse me. Oh!
Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales? I don't believe a word of it, Anne. It's pure fabrication.
Auntie May then went on to say that lying on top of her previous behavior was even more reprehensible, and that she must take her for an imbecile to think that she could be fobbed off with such an unlikely story, spending her time with the Prince of Wales, indeed. It was at this point that the chambermaid appeared, announcing that there was a visitor.
It is I, Bertie. And the devil of a job we've had finding you. Had half Paris in an uproar. This, I take it, is your Auntie May.
Yes. Your Royal Highness, may I present my aunt, Miss May Balfour?
Oh, delighted, my dear Miss Balfour.
Why, she...
Your aunt is recovered?
Somewhat, Your Highness.
Bertie is far friendlier. Oh,
please, Your Highness, I'm covered with confusion as it is.
Oh, forgive me. I do not wish to embarrass you. I apologize for taking you to such a low place last night, and as for my conceit in presuming that you would guess my identity,
oh,
I really...
Only half an ounce of brains in their heads would have known. Oh, I blush when I think of my stupidity.
Oh, please, my dear Anne, I may call you Anne? I'm flattered that you saw fit to accompany an old man, to look upon him as a friend and not to be influenced by his status. It is indeed a compliment that you took me simply at face value. These past few days have been quite delightful. I will, however, admit that my thoughts at first had been to engage in a little harmless, light flirtation. It never occurred to me that you would be unaware of my true identity. I do beg you to forgive my conceit and accept my humblest apologies. And believe me when I say that I shall always look upon you as a true and sincere friend. Thank you.
Oh, Your Highness,
please, however, you will appreciate that propriety demands that our relationship ends here.
Of course.
Good. Thank you. And as a small token of my esteem, please accept this.
A musical box. It's delightful. How did you know I've always wanted
one? Oh, shall we say an educated guess? There is a message engraved on the inside of the lid.
Let this humble token remind you of an old man's gratitude. Oh, Bertie!
Goodbye, my dear. Remember me with affection, if you can.
And there you have it. Anne and her Auntie May return to Bedfordshire, having had a most unforgettable 2 weeks in Europe's romantic capital. And, of course, discretion forbade them boasting of their Paris encounter. It remained their especial secret. Here, the box is yours. Treasure it, as Anne and May Balfour treasured their secret. Good afternoon. Do pop in again whenever you're passing.
That was Tales of Antiquity, written and produced by Kenneth Hendrick.